When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined with our super producer, Ball Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. Brought to you by four people who have never been to Thailand. Tonight's tale is a strange one. It may not be appropriate for all audiences due to the, at times, graphic descriptions of violence involved. Earlier in Strange News, we shared an ongoing story that rocked the nation of Thailand to the core. We're returning to this tale tonight. Here are the facts.
How do you know I haven't been to Thailand?
I asked you
a few years back. Did something change?
It's just presumptive of you, sir. Okay.
All right. Well, not to put you in a box, Matt. So three people who have not been to Thailand and one person who doesn't
neither confirm nor
box.
Deny.
Right.
Yeah. I've been there in my mind and in my heart. I really like Thai food, but that doesn't count. No, I have not been to Thailand, but I can confirm. Matt, it's up to you. Do what you will.
You're not the only mysterious one over here, Ben.
I've never been to Thailand. That's definitely on record. And everybody is a mystery, right? We contain multitudes, as Whitman said. Speaking of multitudes, there are going to be a lot of Thai names and places in tonight's show. We are not native speakers. Maybe that's the first thing, so please bear with us. But we can say, like any country, Thailand's home to stunning beauty, innovation, and some very troubling imperfections. Have you guys heard, one of the monikers of Thailand is the Land of Smiles?
I have not heard that, but I'm a big fan of the history of Thai, like, electronic music and, like, disco and stuff. You know, that band Krungben, they are not native Thai individuals, but they take a lot of influence from that sound. If you're into that, there's some really cool deep cut kind of records you can find from Thai artists from the 60s and 70s. Really cool kind of psychedelic, jazzy sort of dance music. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I've been getting really into Turkish psychedelic music from the same time period, too. But yeah, Krungben is perfect. It's nice writing, studying music. It's very lo-fi and chill. And Krungben is a Thai phrase or Thai word. But I think for a lot of folks who haven't been to Thailand, it's easy to forget that
like any other country, there's a lot more at play beneath the surface, right? It is a different culture. It is a different part of the world. We're talking about this a little bit off air. Their government is extremely different from the West, especially in their practice of, help me with the French pronunciation here, the lèse majesté or lèse majesté. The rights of the king.
Guessing for a silent S there, but that's my only critique. I think the rest was perfect, but who's to say? I'm not sure. I think you nailed it.
So what is this idea, right? It's like if you in any way are seen defaming or insulting or threatening the monarchy, you can be locked up in jail for 3 to 15 years.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's not very smiley behavior.
It's not,
pretty frowny stuff right there. Yeah.
That's a good point. I mean, it's not the main topic of our conversation, but it is baffling because it affects freedom of the press. It is broadly enforced. Like one example would be you can go to jail for 3 years if you step on a newspaper that has a picture of the king on it, or if you like a social media comment, you can be prosecuted.
Do you think you could call a witness to say that it was an accident that you stepped on that newspaper featuring the king and like get out of it? Or is it
His Majesty the King of Thailand does not care if it was an accident.
There are no accidents when it comes to defaming the king. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I imagine you can mitigate it and say something like, hey, I'm a foreigner. I'm a Falong. I didn't know. I was just walking in a hurry, right? But it is weaponized to persecute political opponents and activists. I mean, it's not the topic of our conversation today, but it's a good example of how people can stereotype, exoticize, or simplify images of another place without realizing that there's a complicated reality for the people actually living there. I mean, that goes back to, the perception of Thailand as like a party city country. Not the store, but like a country where people go to party and do drugs. And
well, the drug laws are really strict, right? Yes. I'm sorry if you already mentioned that, but I mean, no, I don't think so. They're like very draconian.
Yes. Yes, sir.
You don't want to mess around.
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. And foreign sex tourism is a thing. Human trafficking is a problem. One thing I didn't know much about that plays a role in our show tonight, consumer debt is out of control in Thailand. It's like 90-something percent of the total GDP. People have all kinds of debt, and there's also a complicated relationship with gambling. It has, just like the drug laws, they have very, very strict gambling laws, but it's not stopping anything.
Yeah, I'd love to explore this a little more, but I'm familiar with the term, I think from the Big Lebowski, Thai stick, and it referred to a really like powerful strain of marijuana and even like a way that it was like bundled up and sold. And I just looked it up and it's totally a thing. Like there was in the 60s and 70s, Thailand was responsible for some of the highest quality marijuana out there in the 70s, grown by the hill tribes of Thailand. And they used these like silk lines to tie these buds on, literally tie them to a stick. I wonder if that is part of the complicated, relationship with drugs, is that it had this, reputation and the government decided we don't want that to be part of our legacy or whatever. So they got nasty about it. But also maybe it's okay to export, but not for the citizens to use. I'm curious. I'm sorry. I'm just bringing up a bunch of questions.
Those are great questions. Yeah. I mean, we could see that as a reaction because, the recreational drug use is heavily vilified, right? In all of Southeast Asia. We're not kidding. Do not do drugs in Thailand. But it makes sense what you're saying, Noel, that it could be a reaction, even if it's not like a moral imperative to stop people from smoking cannabis. Maybe it's more of something like we need to deny drug cartels income streams.
For sure. And last thing on this, because I know it's not really the topic today, but I'm just seeing in an article that I found that at the time in the 70s, that it was largely run by surfers, by Thai surfers, and that surfers as a culture at the time in the 70s were considered draft dodgers because they were like shiftless layabouts who were trying to avoid military service. And they were responsible for these very complex smuggling operations that led to the stuff being available in the States. So I don't know. Sorry, this is interesting to me, but would maybe worth an exploration down the line.
Oh, yeah. And check out the hippie trail through the 50s and 70s. That's another big piece of history here.
You find yourself in Thailand, one of the things you have to do is get a little religious, or at least go to the religious sites that are out there. Buddhist, some of the Hindu temples.
Shrines and the temples
wats
and such.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The wats.
Well, some of the wats, some of them that are not. Some of them like the Sanctuary of Truth, which is the largest wooden building
in
Thailand.
That sounds like a magical place.
It does. Yeah. If you see it, you would think it's even more magical than the name implies. There's so many sites in Thailand that are just, they defy the imagination, I think, when it comes to their architecture and the detailing.
And the jungles, just, I mean, the absolute lushness of their, I guess you call them rainforests, kind of, but there's certainly a lot of really absolutely spectacular, you know, forests and, you know, countryside, things like that.
Biodiversity is huge as well. And it's important that we mention these really positive things that are unique to Thailand that not every country has. But the gambling laws themselves, to get back to this, this is a setup. The gambling laws themselves, because gambling is so heavily regulated, there are only two exceptions to gambling laws in Thailand. The first is horse racing, and the second is the state-supported lottery. Anything other than that is illegal.
Interesting.
However, like more than 57% of the population is into online gambling in some way, and a lot of these gambling outfits are run by shadowy cartels. Like, you remember Spectre from the James Bond series?
Of course.
There's like a specter, basically, for some of this online gambling, a transnational group named the Outlaws. Not the most creative name, but they got other stuff going on. Another thing that the West doesn't really talk about when it comes to Thailand is the number of serial killers that have been active at some point there. And part of that goes back to what you're talking about with Thai sticker, the drug trade. The hippie trail, these vulnerable populations were targeted by people who leveraged the criminal underground to get away with crimes that would not be reported, right? Or would be ignored because powerful people weren't getting targeted. That's where our story starts tonight. Because recently, last year, Thai authorities announced something new and disturbing. They'd caught what they were calling the most notorious known serial killer in the entire history of the country. A woman in her 30s named Sawarat Rongsiwuthapan.
Good job. Wow.
Or to her friends.
That was impressive, and I'm not blowing smoke.
That's very kind.
I barely stuttered with that. That was very well done.
Well, apologies. Apologies again to all native Thai speakers. She was known as Om to her friends. That's what we're going to call her tonight. At least her friends called her that until she murdered them, allegedly.
Cool.
Here's where it gets crazy. While we are not native Thai speakers, we can speak to previous research on the phenomenon of serial killers, right, guys? It's much more rare than perceived in fiction. And there's a kind of demographic of serial killers who tend to get apprehended, right?
The dumb ones. No, I'm just joking. The ones that escalate too quickly.
The ones that get caught tend to overwhelmingly be male or male identifying, and they have a lot of behaviors conforming to the controversial McDonald triad theory, which I didn't know. I think in previous episodes we've talked about this, but the more I look into it, there's not a ton of later research validating this theory.
No, this is like the behavioral sciences at Quantico kind of thinking, you know, early on. But, you know, there's weird stuff in there, especially harming animals early on. Mm-hmm. That to me is one of the biggest. The whole bedwetting thing, I don't know. I don't know how much water that holds. But what's the third one?
Arson.
Yeah.
Or fascination with fire. I mean, fire is fascinating, though.
Like a harming something else that is living with a perceived callousness, right? And then watching, like viewing destruction, watching it occur with the fire, and then like having some kind of uncontrollable part of your physical body.
Mm. I always thought, yeah, that's a better way to phrase it. I always wondered whether the persistent bedwetting thing was a psyop meant to like get in the heads of the criminals being hunted.
Maybe.
So anyway, if you are looking at news about this person, you will run into the name Sararat, but you are more likely to run into the ghoulish nickname the media gave her, which is Om Cyanide.
And we don't know a whole heck of a lot about her early life, but the court documents and reporting do give us some basic information. Which is how we're going to refer to her, because I don't think either Matt or I could do nearly as good a job as Ben did on that pronunciation. But Am is a graduate of Nakhon Pathom. Oh, geez, I said that. Now I have to say this. Rajabat University.
Nailed it.
Which is west of Bangkok. And some of her teachers, lecturers, profs seemed to have a similar sense of her personality. And it's the kind of stuff we hear often about serial killers, that nothing out of the ordinary about her looks or behavior, just, you know, kind of kept to herself, you know, not really anything to write home about. She did major in public relations and graduated in 2009.
Yeah. That's an interesting thing, right? The interior lives of everybody. It does seem like when you hear that about someone that stands out like this as someone who's done a lot of harm and has kind of a secret life that they're living, it is this weird, like, there's not a big outward show of anything because so much is going on in the background, the stuff that nobody else gets to see. It is a pretty common thing.
Mm-hmm. Agree. What's that old line? Lives of quiet desperation, right? We know that she was married and divorced with a guy named, reported sometimes as Vitun or Witun Rongsiwuthapon. He was a senior police official in their province, Ratchaburi. He is no longer a police official. And although their marriage was dissolved, they continued to see each other and live together. It's very, again, like you're saying, the complicated stories, right? Everybody has stuff they don't want you to know.
Well, and it's going to come in later, just her connection to the police department, which is really fishy to me. I think to everybody else, it's just, it's a little weird because she did have two children with that person, right? But then she also has this other thing going on, a common law husband.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And then we'll see that two police officers also die in the course of this. But so fast forward to the arrest. Police arrest Om on Tuesday, April 25th. It's 2023. And they arrest her after a friend of hers collapses on a road trip earlier that month, April 14th. Om was traveling with her friend, a 32-year-old businesswoman named Sirapon Kwan Wong, and they were west of Bangkok. They took part in a pretty common thing, a Buddhist protection ritual, which sounds pretty cool. They went to a place called Banpong Pier, and they were releasing fish into the river. And that feels like a wholesome hangout time to me.
Sure.
Till you see the CCTV footage where Om is the last person seen with Kwan Wong before she faints. And she dies.
That's right. This was a detail that really stuck out to me, I think, in the initial reporting that we looked at, you know, when this case kind of came full circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was initially just charged with stealing, and the death was believed to have been of natural causes. But later, charges began to really pile up. And according to Deputy National Police Commissioner General Surashat Big Joke Hokparn?
That's really? His real nickname.
Big Joke. I don't know. Okay, maybe it's cultural difference. This is like a sort of a diss nickname. Maybe he just got a good sense of humor. But there was a later autopsy that then found traces of cyanide in Siriporn's system.
Yeah, the victim's mother is part of the reason that Om gets caught at all. So the mother's name is Thongpin Kyachanasiri, and she files a police report. She says, I don't believe that these are natural causes, right? And I demand that there be an autopsy done because my daughter's money and jewelry have gone missing. I suspect murder, and I'm pretty sure that Om did it. And if you look at that footage, the CCTV footage, which you can find easily on YouTube or wherever you look for videos, you see that Koi is the familiar name people use for Kwan Wong. So Kwan Wong goes to the pier where she's going to release the fish, and Om goes apparently to the restroom. When Om comes back, she sees her friend has collapsed. She waves bystanders over to come help, but then she leaves the scene, and she takes her friend's cash, her friend's mobile phone, and a designer handbag and runs away.
Yeah, she doesn't stick around at all to help her friend that, you know, she was on that trip with, right? Which is very strange.
Sus. AF.
Yeah. And it's also, it's the moment you're talking about there, Ben, where the two of them separate and Koi goes down to the water, which is where they're headed and what they're going to do. And it gets even weirder when you start hearing, where this is only one case out of a bunch of them we're going to talk about, but there's something similar here with like sharing something that is ingestible. It can be many, one of many things, but sharing something or taking something to drink or eat.
It's the same kind of red flag that we saw around that Australian case that you brought initially, Matt, I believe, with the mushrooms and the, was it like a beef Wellington or something? Like it was some, you know, again, shared food items that, and then all of a sudden people are falling ill or dying. You know, I mean, that was obviously one situation, but this is many. But yeah, I think that was what initially caught our attention about that story too, or as like, something funny's going on here.
What we're going to find in this is that, like, I didn't think about possibly giving somebody a pill and telling them, hey, this is a vitamin.
Yeah, supplement.
Also, yeah, don't take pills from people.
No, unless it's in a package.
Right, that is clearly being opened.
It says Tylenol.
Hey, by the way, folks, we are, just because we might be paranoid doesn't mean we're wrong. Hey, guys, I did buy the three pack of fire extinguishers.
Yeah, dude.
So next time we hang out, they should be here. It has nothing to do with anything, unless you've heard an earlier conversation we had about this. Anyway, yes, it goes deeper, and I think you're right, Noel. There are similarities. There are similarities to that Australian case stood out to me as well. The mother has some juice. The mother, Koi's mom, has some juice. She knows people who know people. So she is able to get the case directly to the deputy police chief, General Surachate Big Joe Kukbal. And she says, look, I'm afraid that if this goes to the local Ratchaburi police, it'll be buried or it'll be ignored. Because she knows this family, and she knows that Sarawat, or Om's former husband, was at the time the deputy superintendent at the local police station. So wheels within wheels, you know, and you have to wonder, like, what kind of vibe did the mom get that made her escalate it like this, you know?
I wonder that a lot. I think just the fact that this supposed friend definitely took money and belongings, right? And then when you hear, I wonder if she had any contact with any of the other victims, like families, because there is a pattern. And I think if those victims' families or relatives were talking amongst themselves, you would start to see that pattern emerging.
That's true, pretty quickly too, right? So that's a good point. So when questioned, denies any involvement in the theft. Like you said, Noel, she's originally arrested for stealing, which is not a hard thing to apprehend her for because she does run off with these belongings. It's on video. It's not a deep fake. It happened. But then, like you said, Matt, investigators start putting together pieces of a puzzle that seems to only grow larger and more disturbing with each new discovery. Here's one. They find a bottle of cyanide at Om's house during her arrest.
Yeah, a bit of a red flag.
Yeah, not really a standard household item, don't think.
It's not a staple spice in the spice rack.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the big question that we've had, and guys, I went ahead and sacrificed my Google search.
Like, same.
How can I procure cyanide? Mm-hmm. How could I make cyanide? Mm. You know, like, it's over for me. But yeah, I'm not actually interested in that if anyone's out there
too
listening.
Too late. That's exactly what someone would say.
Dang it.
It's funny. I put that in later in some of our notes because I was having a similar feeling as researching some of this over the past few weeks. And I thought, damn, look at what I'm doing. I'm doing bot to dollar conversions. I'm checking on cyanide regulation in Thailand. I'm checking on flights to Thailand. I'm looking up Google Maps, you know.
How do I set up a post office box in another name?
You know? Exactly.
Isn't that crazy though? Because it's all controlled by an algorithm that just sees those as points on a map, and right. Then it's like, oh, I see where this guy's going.
Our search histories are the digital version of egregious face tattoos at this point. You know
right.
what I mean?
But the big question remains: how did she get a bottle of cyanide?
Right. Right. What kind of parties does she go to? Well, investigators say she also claimed later she would go on to claim, look, I had nothing to do with my friend's death, but she probably took illegal drugs that were laced with cyanide, sort of an accidental fentanyl overdose argument. Total bullshit, by the way. Yeah. It turns out that Om's sister-in-law owns a pharmacy also in Ratchaburi, where police found what they called a collection of suspicious capsules.
Wait, so is she implicated in this now too? Or was it maybe just a case of her not knowing and sort of taking advantage of that relationship?
Open-ended at this point. We're not sure. Or at least the police have not specifically stated this. We know that they have been... They have been, since 2023, doing the thing where they're trying to track down all possible sources of cyanide in the country, like where you could buy this stuff or where you could make it, you know. The number isn't certain yet, and also the number of victims isn't certain yet. People, like other families, are coming forward, and it seemed multiple people connected with Om at some point had also died under eerily similar mysterious circumstances. It went from like 8 victims to 10 victims, then at least 12. The number rose to 14, and then 15 is what is in the courts right now, but the number speculated, unproven, has gone to 18, possibly 20. To this day, no one's sure.
Well, the big deal, it's almost like with Zodiac Killer or some of these other major serial killers, trying to find that first victim date, right? And then you start there and then you move that number rises as you move towards present day. But then if you start to go back a little further, you're like, oh, wait a second, there actually might be more this time in Riverside or whatever. That's just like the way these things go. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are 20 people.
I mean, yeah, that first date victim is one of the big questions. Like you said, it's tough to answer. Is it 2015, like Thai authorities are saying? Is it 2005? Because we're going to have to discuss a little bit about the science of autopsies and the bureaucracy and just the chemical, the group name cyanide, right?
Yeah. Question is what was the inciting incident that made that escalation to the first poisoning? Like what is that thing that pushed her there? Right. If she is in fact the serial killer that's killing people with cyanide, because I was just trying to, I was thinking back because she graduated in 2009, right?
Right.
So if it started at college, that would kind of match up, right? A 2005 date.
Yeah. If the 2005 date is our date, you know?
Yeah. Anyway, this is fun. I would want to go as deep as possible down this rabbit hole, but okay.
Yes, for sure. And we will go at least as far as the information we have currently leads us after a quick word from our sponsor.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. on demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned. Other families are coming forward. Other civilians are coming forward as soon as the news of suspected cyanide poisoning breaks. And a lot of these people are saying, you know, we have a loved one, a family member who died and died the same way. And the last person who kicked it with them was Om. There's another thing we mentioned right before the break that I think we also have to point out, which is in cases like this, or like Zodiac, when things escalate, there are also going to be some false positives. Just logically, there are people who lost a loved one in a way that might seem similar, and they will rightly ask, is my loved one's death part of it? And the answer is not always yes. But that's why there's sometimes a fog of war and speculation around the numbers. We do know, however, that in at least one case, allegedly tried to kill someone who survived.
Yeah, that's something that you do see from time to time in hunts for serial killers, is the one that got away that makes some report or something that tends to trigger things, or maybe isn't even a red flag until after the fact. And then it's used as a way of kind of backtracking and finding more about the person's MO.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Like the a serial assaulter or killer who inexplicably at some point kidnaps someone and lets them go, or chases them or tries to shoot them but doesn't shoot them fatally.
Well, like at the time, it might not match a pattern, so the report might not set off any, you know, alarm bells. But then after there's suspicion and then maybe cross-reference for that type of report, you know, then you see, oh, what about this? It's in the right area. Let's go talk to that person. I'm not saying that happened in this case, but it certainly could have been a break.
Yeah. And there definitely is that kind of that break in the case here, when after this initial reporting, a 36-year-old woman at the time named Katima Passayard, known as Plaw to her friends, she comes to the police and she says, I was poisoned in 2020, but I made it to a hospital where doctors resuscitated me. She was at a mall. And she got a pill offered to her by her friend Om, and they parted ways. She felt a tightness in her chest. She lost feeling in her hands. She was calling Om, the story goes, to pick her up, but Om got lost. And so someone contacted emergency services, and they were able to keep her alive.
Well, yeah, but the way I've read the story is that she was trying to call Om, and Om was kept, like, canceling the phone call, basically. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. someone sees there's an incoming call, it just hits decline. Mm-hmm. That's what she was saying happened, but she got through to, there's a hotline number, 1669, there, that she called and was able to get through. Which, thank goodness. But she, at the beginning, she was unsure that it was poisoning. She thought, oh, well, something is just wrong and I'm having a medical emergency.
Sure.
And then she sees some of the reporting and other events occurring and thinks, oh, wait a second.
Yeah, she didn't put it together. She thought she just had a close call, you know, mm-hmm. and got lucky. She also told the police, as she is putting these pieces together, that she loaned 250,000 baht to earlier. Baht is the currency of Thailand. That is right now, that's probably, it's a little bit north of $7,000 US, $7,048 and change. So there was a financial incentive, it appeared.
So we're thinking that it would be I'm taking money from someone, I'm borrowing that money, then I'm killing that person so I don't owe her anymore?
Right.
Jeez.
Something seems like a plan that could go awry really quickly. I am shocked, frankly, that it went on as long as it did.
Agreed. I mean, and let's pause here. As we set up previously, to talk a little bit about the nature of cyanide and have a moment of silence for our search histories. Paul, could you hit some sad music? There we go.
You know, I think this is an area where in our initial conversations about this, we all had questions about like how cyanide acts on the body. What kind of traces does it leave behind? How long does it stick around in the body? So this is, I think, exciting for all of us to kind of get to the bottom of it. I think we on the fly kind of answered some of those questions at the time, but this is a much deeper dive here. So this is very cool. I mean, it's not cool. It's horrific.
Well, we're talking about sources of cyanide poisoning first, right? Yeah. So like, how does it actually get in your system? I think we've probably heard that cigarettes can often contain cyanide. We've heard that.
Yes.
But often I think it's like, how much of that is the anti-smoking, I don't want to say propaganda, but it's the anti-smoking message, right?
Yeah, like saying it contains jet fuel or whatever, you know.
We know there are additives to cigarettes, right?
Sure, yeah.
But I think cyanide is just one of those like, oh, wow, okay, that's scary, but I've heard that.
We also know there are allowable levels of mercury in fish that people can consume. So,
mercury doesn't, like, kill you. No.
That's the thing, right? Like, in fiction and in those atrocious spy novels and all that stuff, cyanide is often portrayed as this super secret, fast-acting thing. Only MI6 and Nazis know about it or whatever. But to your point, Matt, it might be surprising for a lot of our fellow conspiracy realists to know that you can be exposed to this toxin from everyday chemicals and even common foods. Stuff like lima beans, yucca, cassavas, almonds, apple seeds, burning plastic, smoke from a house fire. Yeah.
Is that one of those things where isn't lima beans one of those things where you can cook it down in a certain way and get and extract some bad things from it, like the Breaking Bad thing with the whatever, the ricin?
This episode brought to you by the Anarchist Cookbook.
I see. Okay. God. I knew about pits, right, in some fruit, right?
Sure,
specifically cherry, the stones in cherries, mm-hmm. and how dangerous
and
that
peaches.
Is.
Yeah.
But I've heard that's really dangerous, but I never really understood, I guess, that you could weaponize it in a way. I thought it was just be careful with it.
Oh, man. Quick cursory Google. Most cooking research related to cyanide removal has been conducted on cassava. Boiling in water for long periods of time, greater than 30 minutes in a large excess of water, is the most effective method for reducing cyanide. 80% of the original cyanide will be removed. So that's extraction in terms of making it safe to eat. But I guess what do you do with the extract, man? You know?
But is that like with all root vegetables where it absorb, like they absorb things in the ground? Or are we saying cassava and like yucca just has that in it?
Bamboo shoots do. Yeah. Yeah, oh, they got that dog in them, man. But the it also that, side
that's why preparing your own dry beans is something you got to be a little bit careful about. Like if you're not using jarred or whatever canned beans that are pre-cooked, if you're doing it from the raw beans, soaking them and stuff, you do have to be thoughtful about that because you can't accidentally not do it right.
Yeah, and one common misconception that the fictional stories miss is that cyanide in general refers to any chemical that contains a carbon-nitrogen bond. The issue is that lots of stuff contains cyanide, but they're not automatically deadly poisons as sure. a result.
So we're not trying to also be alarmist about beans, just to put that out there. No one needs to be scared about eating their vegetables, right?
you should follow the directions, though. Yeah. Yeah,
for sure. Maybe don't take vegetables from strangers. I don't know.
Don't take vegetables or pills from strangers. If someone says, hey, do you want a pill? And you say no. And they say, hey, do you want this handful of lima beans? Also say no.
It sounds like a Jack and the Beanstalk kind of scenario.
Exactly. It really does. Yeah. So like sodium cyanide, potassium cyanide, hydrogen cyanide, these kind of things are... they all have that carbon-nitrogen bond, and those things can be lethal. But there are a bunch of other compounds called nitriles. You've probably ingested them. That's the stuff in the cassava, the almonds, and so on. If you do have a case of cyanide poisoning, of acute cyanide poisoning, it does kill people quickly. It works. It does it in like 2 to 5 minutes, and then they're dead, heart failure. But it's not a silent killer. That's why it's weird for it to be so commonplace in espionage fiction, because if you are a medical professional, you know what you're looking for. It is pretty much impossible to hide cyanide poisoning in a lethal dose. That stuff is readily apparent in a corpse for several months after death.
That's what you mean by silent killer, like you undetectable, I guess, kind
right,
of thing.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's also a very painful death, right? I mean, so it's an effective poison if you want someone out of the picture, but it's not something you would realistically use if you want to avoid getting caught. So it's kind of amateur hour to use it.
Well, unless it's in your fake tooth, right? And you're getting tortured.
Or you're killing yourself, right? Yeah, exactly. Which also, I don't know, apparently... it's something that chemists have used historically when they commit suicide. But the reason they do it is not because it's painless. It's because it's one of the most certain ways to do it, to end your life. And it's just an ugly thing to think about, unfortunately.
Well, I feel better.
Yeah.
I don't.
So fun at parties. Okay, let's get back to the investigation, though. So that's a little bit of cyanide science, right? That's a little bit of why this is unusual. One of the first questions we could all have is, okay, so guys, you're saying this kind of poisoning is readily apparent. In an autopsy, people know what they're looking for. So how did someone do this for so long, right? Or with so many people? We'll get to that toward the end. But right now, maybe we talk a little bit about the unfolding of the investigation. Authorities said, hey, owed a lot of these victims money. She also had started businesses with them or kind of loans.
Yeah. That's just interesting because it's not like you would necessarily turn that up from, say, a credit check or something. Like, to owe individuals, multiple individuals money to find that out takes a little detective work, you know? I mean, you got to give props there for them figuring out that particular pattern. Because it is, in a way, kind of smart because it's not something that there's just like a uniform record of necessarily. Some of the businesses, sure, but, you know, in general, just like taking out a loan from an individual, she must have ingratiated herself to a lot of these people to even be in a position where they would have done that for her, you know? It's very interesting. The manipulation, the levels of manipulation really start to kind of, you know, show through here, I think.
Public relations degree, right?
Oh, gosh. Yes. You're right.
Ben, correct me if I'm wrong here. I had read that there are even instances where it wasn't like a formal loaning of money to Om, but just meeting with somebody that I guess she assumes is going to have a lot of money on them. And then taking them or attempting to take them out or allegedly attempting to poison them, like at a restaurant or at an outing, kind of like she did when they were feeding the fish, things like that. Like, did you find that too? Or yeah. Was it all like loans?
Yeah, a lot of thanks to The National out of Thailand for some great reporting on this. And of course, the public statements of Big Joke. And we have a bit of an epilogue about Big Joke at the end of this. But yeah, you're on the money there, because she would target people, according to prosecutors, hashtag allegedly. She would befriend people she perceived as wealthy, earn their trust, and then say, you know, like, hey, we should hang out more often. Classic manipulation moves, and then get them to consume food, drinks, or herbs, and then search them for money or deprive them of possessions. And then it goes to the idea of accomplices, because if you are moving hard cash below a certain amount, not that difficult to move. Possessions, especially bespoke things or relatively rare things like very high-end designer accoutrement, that's a little bit tougher, right? If there are only X amount of, you know, just for example, if there are only X amount of Hermes bags in this town, right, then the people who have those bags know who else has the bags. So it's a little harder to sell it.
Can we talk about one specific case that happened in 2015 without jumping too far ahead?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's this one case where a person died who was close to Om, and then Om seemed to swoop in to try and take over the finances of this person that died.
Sketch!
Monta Teep Cowan or something like that. This person who had left Thailand for quite a while, like I think got married somewhere and then came back. And when she arrived back, died very soon after. And Sararat, or it was Om, jumped in to like handle all the post-death finances for this person, which is really weird.
Yeah, let me handle this in your time of grieving. And unfortunately, con artists do that all the world round. You know, you find somebody at the worst moment in their life, having lost a loved one. You're a rock for them to lean on. You're a purported safe space.
Mm-hmm.
And dangerous things can happen there if people have ill intent. We know that a week after that initial arrest, when all this stuff is starting to come together, the authorities also arrest Om's ex-husband, the senior police official, and he gets charged. This is still confusing to me. He gets charged with fraud and embezzlement, both related to and not related to the deaths.
Yeah. But because I think there's more going on there.
I agree.
And again, I brought up the common law husband that she had. And then also, did we mention that she was 4 months pregnant when she was picked up, when she was arrested?
We haven't. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is crucial to the events in the story. The term of her pregnancy gets reported at different months, depending on where you look. But
yeah.
she's definitely pregnant at the time of Khoi's death.
Well, so it just, for me, it brings up this issue of interpersonal pressures. So if you think about Om pressuring potential victims, alleged victims, to, you know, do what she wants to end up getting things from them for her, I wonder if she has or has had people in her life that are pressuring her to do things right as well, because often it's not just a lone wolf actor doing something like this.
Right.
So I don't know. I wonder like who fathered that child. Is it the ex? Is it the common law? Is it somebody else? And what are those relationships like?
Right. And did she have accomplices? Spoiler, the Thai courts concluded yes. She does, or the Thai police did.
Already kind of red flagged her sister-in-law a little bit with that, pharmacy.
Cyanide?
Yeah, well, the pharmacy suspicious capsules or whatever. And so police say that this gentleman, whose name I'm not going to try to pronounce because you've already done such a great job, turned himself into police after authorities issued a warrant. So he's just like, here I am. The couple though they were divorced, were actually still living together. And police said that Mr. Rangsa Wuthaporn, that's not too bad, was most likely involved in the alleged murder of an ex-boyfriend by the name of Suthisak Punkwan.
Yes.
And that he also helped destroy evidence of Kwan Wong's murder.
Mm-hmm. Dude. That's Khoi.
Yeah, Khoi. Yeah.
Yeah. But we didn't even really talk about that. That this is the common law husband, the Punkwan. Mm-hmm. Punkwan, this Suthisak that you just said. So this person died March 12th, I think 2023. But this person was potentially a poisoning victim. Well, at least the reporting that I was reading in May of last year, 2023, they kept saying potentially another one of the victims. I think it's pretty certain at this point that this person was a victim. But they're also reporting, we're talking about the husband, the ex-husband now, who was just arrested that we mentioned. This person I saw as a lieutenant colonel, but this is also like the, what did you call him, Ben, or his title at the police station?
Oh, I just used senior police official because he was a high-level police officer at one point, and it gets a little confusing for us because Thai police are a little bit more militarized than U.S. police.
That's why I was so confused when I saw Lieutenant Colonel. Like, okay, interesting. I wonder what that actually means. And then was used in a different, he was given a different standing in another piece of reporting I saw. But I didn't know, and it didn't say if he was still an officer employed at the time when he turned himself in, or if he had retired.
No, he was still an officer. He got fired.
Got it.
He got fired
before this or after he turned himself.
Like in very short
Got
order
it.
Of that, you Got know, because you can't yes, statistically, there are more arsonists in the fire department than there are in other jobs. But if they find out you're an arsonist, then you're out of a job, right? They just can't.
That's not very nice. Just think about how much they love that job.
Why are you looking at? Why are you taking the side of the arsonist?
I'm just saying, that's dream job for an artist.
Oh boy!
Another disturbing statistic from a while back when people still went to brick and mortar stores: something like 12% of shoe store employees are working entirely because they have a foot fetish.
Sick.
Dude, speaking of that, I saw an Instagram video earlier today where a fan met Quentin Tarantino on the street in L.A. and asked him to sign her foot and also to rate her foot.
Did he do it?
He didn't. He refused to rate the foot, but you could tell he got a kick out of it.
There we go. It's worth it. So this is going to lead us to other people who are charged as accomplices. Her lawyer. Om's lawyer gets accused. They say the lawyer knowingly helped destroy or conceal evidence. They're saying she couldn't have gotten away with it for as long as she did. But they also discovered something very important about the motive. And we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. When we return, we'll break it down.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On-demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. In May of 2023, police discover what they believe to be the primary motive. We danced around it a little bit earlier here. Money. Again, the great reporting at The Nation shows us that police, God, these stats are astonishing, that police discovered Om was in possession of 78 million bahts. That's almost $2.2 million, spread over, get this, 180 separate bank accounts.
Oh, no,
she had
a system.
Think about how many times that maybe they're all set up online. But
I mean, but the
God.
Passwords alone.
Whoa. And Ben, I think you did a great job of teasing it and really not quite getting to what it was about. We were talking at the beginning of the show about the laws in Thailand and about the cultural issue with gambling in Thailand. And it was apparently a lot of these accounts, or many of them, maybe most of them, had been linked to various gambling sites and accounts.
Do you want to do that quote from Big Joke? Sorry, we know he has a real title. It's the nickname is so good.
Yeah, it's hard to shake a nickname like that. That is wild, man. Also, before Luke, I just wanted to say to ask: is it sick that in my mind I'm like, "Well, money, that's boring. I want my serial killers to only kill for abject pleasure,
you know?" Or like divine. It's divine.
I'm joking.
That's
the
one, dude.
It is the way we've been conditioned to think about serial killers, you know. And this is basically an elaborate and deadly grift, you know, series of them. If everything is as it's said here, so Big Joke had this to say. She was gambling to the tune of about 1 million baht per day.
No.
Investigators also found that these accounts received money that had been transferred directly from some of the victims' accounts.
Ouch.
What's that translated to, 1 million baht?
That's about $28,199.
A day?
God.
Do we know what kind of, this matters, do we know what kind of games she was playing? Like what, like as you said,
video poker.
Candy
is it
Crush?
That?
No, I don't know.
Ben, you had said that there's a lot of very specific guidelines or guardrails around gambling, with horse racing being one of the only like physical versions. I just wonder if there are similarly guardrails around what kind of, you know, virtual games are allowed to be played.
Online gambling is illegal. But it's just, it's impossible to,
I see.
It's impossible to stop it.
I see.
Okay. Whoa. Do we think she was laundering money for someone?
Don't know. We don't know.
Because if you're spending that much money a day, pushing it through various, whatever, gambling sites, casinos, whatever it is, I imagine that you're actually moving that money for somebody.
It just seems like a risky way to move money, though, if you're, because you got to place bets. You know, I mean, like you could lose it. You wouldn't be able.
But why would you have 180 accounts? Like, what is the reasoning for 180 accounts?
Well, maybe they're under different names to obscure how much money you have by spreading it around.
Maybe there's a limit that one online outlet has.
Will allow you to do per day. That's per account. And also, you got to wonder, too, it seemed like she was really keen on, quote unquote, taking over people's accounts and finances. You got to wonder if she maybe just did that. Too with some, I don't know. I mean,
true. That's possible, right? Because what they're saying that the accounts belonged to her, but that's not quite the same thing as saying that she used her real name on all of these. And
yeah,
this leads to two other big issues in Thai society. This online gambling thing that we've mentioned, it doesn't seem to have the same sort of in practice regulation that you'd be familiar with in other countries. It is apparently an open secret that a significant portion of these operations are touched by or indeed run by transnational crime cartels, like Spectre level stuff, possibly with the assistance from corrupt government officials. In 2022 alone, the one we have the most recent numbers for, 1,500 people were arrested for some version of fraud and online gambling.
Good God.
It really makes you think about the folks on this side of the pond who cheat at multiplayer games, right? The little hacker guys on Call of Duty or whatever. I can't remember. Yeah.
Like, sure.
What if one of them is working for an international crime ring and they're just in the test case where they have to try it out and see whether there's money to be made cheating at Call of Duty or Tekken 8, which just came out and slaps and is fun and everyone should play it.
I don't believe you're playing Tekken 8 for a second, Ben. You do not have time to be playing Tekken 8.
No, I'm getting in trouble.
That's the man Tekken. Come on. I'll tell you what I got recently, just to lighten the mood a little bit.
Yeah.
I think it's Street Fighter V Championship Edition, which gives you all of the Street Fighter games up to 5 and has like intense online capabilities. Really fun. Those games are so fun still and hold up really beautifully to this day.
That's does it have Street Fighter Alpha?
I think it does. Yeah, I mean, I think it's got all the iterations leading up to 5, if I'm not mistaken, but I haven't really explored it, but it's a pretty big package.
That's so crazy. Why did it take Street Fighter more than 10 years to learn to count to 3? You know what I mean?
That's funny, Ben.
It's unfortunate. But
well, because they had better words like turbo, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it's one of those things sort of like with Mario Kart 8, you know, where we've been on rocking Mario Kart 8 for going on a decade now, and they just keep kind of upgrading the game because they don't need to release another iteration if the previous one's still killing it. That was the case with Street Fighter 2. It was just like a blockbuster game for Capcom, you know?
Yeah. And these blockbuster games, like gaming makes a lot of money. Spoiler, folks, you can probably tell we're gearing up for some episodes on gaming in the future, I think.
Especially with everything that's going on in China. We got an email recently, a listener mail, kind of breaking down some of that stuff about the regulations of online gaming and how it actually pertains to another seeming cultural issue with, you know, this kind of stuff. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. Like, we certainly have that here, too. But I think it's different. I think it varies from culture to culture, the relationship with gambling and even with just, like, screens and stuff, you know?
And then there's also the question of whether prohibition works, and if so,
exactly.
To what degree, right?
It's the biggest question.
Yeah. So this, in 2022 alone, 1,500 people arrested for some sort of online gambling thing. Did a little bit of digging and found that there's a group called International Outlaws who are known for their work in online gambling in Thailand. Their other work includes human trafficking and the drug trade. So this is like when the cartels got involved in avocados. You know what I mean? They found an income stream. And the second thing this triggers in Thailand, which is going on today still, is a national concern among the Thai public, a concern that we share here, which is how easy is it to get cyanide or make cyanide? Why does it seem so easy for the average person to use it repeatedly in a multi-year killing spree? Why didn't the coroner catch any of this stuff, right? We don't even know how far back it went. So we have some things to return back to at the end here. First, the public was also horrified to learn that Om would not receive the death penalty. Thailand does have capital punishment, They do have a harsh justice system. Again, never do drugs in Thailand. We cannot emphasize that enough. But the law there does not allow for the death penalty in the case of pregnancy.
In I would argue that's humane and appropriate. I would also question as to whether she knew that.
Yeah, and, I was going to say.
And acted accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you say this is someone who lacks remorse if everything is as it's being alleged? This is like, you know, people throw around the Black Widow. Kind of, maybe that's sexist. I don't know. It's just a term pop culture has sort of, you know, thrown around for years. The idea of someone using poison to kill people who are close to them, whether it be a spouse or, you know, a loved one or someone whose trust they've earned. But it seems to me this is someone who absolutely, whether feeding an addiction to gambling or just out of callousness and lack of remorse is doing this to people. You know, this is someone who is not a good person.
Well, yeah, it's really weird to me that her ex-husband lived and then her new common-law husband died.
Right. Which, gosh, maybe he didn't have any money. Maybe he wasn't a worthwhile target, you know?
Well, and then she's allegedly still hanging out with her ex-husband. So, just the fact that he's a police officer, that there was so much suspicion that there would be some kind of information leaking or, you know, something fishy going on if that local police department was involved in her prosecution or arrest and all that stuff. It just makes me wonder, like, what was that relationship actually like?
I have a hot, wild prediction, y'all. There's going to be a movie, probably a few, of varying degrees of quality.
It's also surprising, as we were talking about off air, it's also surprising just how little exploration this story has gotten.
Yeah.
Considering
terms of mainstream media. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I had to, like...
We all did. Yeah.
I had to call people who speak Thai and explain this to me.
Just in general, when it came up as a strange news, it was almost like it was mega under the radar feeling, you know? I mean, there are stories about American technology malfunctioning that gets more press than this.
Right.
Know?
And this is a huge story in Thailand. Of course. There is more news. In June of 2023, Aum was sent to the Police General Hospital in Bangkok after prison officials failed to detect the heartbeat of her child. The child was lost. Medical staff performed the abortion. So she is no longer pregnant.
What does that mean? Does that mean there can be a change?
Unknown.
No, okay. I mean in the penalty.
Right, unknown. And social media already in Thailand already had, you know, quite an adverse reaction to the idea that this person was possibly going to escape the death penalty by virtue of carrying a child. So it has changed the conversation. We don't know the full updates. By the way, the reason we kept saying allegedly, Aum has not been officially convicted.
She hasn't been sentenced, right? So that absolutely could change. It would change. I would think this would change everything in terms of what's on the table. I don't know how different the Thai legal system is than ours, but you'd think there would be similar prosecutor type things seeking the death penalty, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're talking about when the police concluded their investigation, she's going to trial for 14 murders. But as happens often in the cases of alleged and proven serial killers, those are only the murders they feel they can prove in court. That does not mean it's the entirety. And these murders occurred across 8 different provinces. This creates a grand total of 80 separate charges. That is the highest for a single person in the entire history of Thailand.
How did that go on for so long, guys?
Yeah, that's been my question. Top of mind, I think, for all of us throughout here.
How expensive is it and how time consuming is it to test for cyanide or poisoning in general, right? When you're looking at a victim or someone who has died, right? And they're going through the system. Would it be that bad to just, let's just test everybody's blood a little bit, just to see.
Right.
Because I guess you wouldn't order a toxicology report for everybody, for every body that you come upon, you know, in any provincial police department. But my goodness, maybe we just should do that.
Right. There should always be an autopsy. even when the cause of death seems readily apparent. I believe under Thai law, I was reading about this. God, my search history, guys. RIP. I was reading about Thai law for autopsies as well, right after searching for some specifics about cyanide. And autopsies are supposed to be the standard operating procedure.
Like, no matter what. Okay.
Right. But the coroner's office had a lot of controversy with this because it goes back to, what do we mean when we say autopsy? Does that include toxicology? Right. And then there are cases, the thing that stood out is the family or relatives can request that an autopsy not be done and request just automatic cremation instead. So some of the reason I think the murder count may be higher, the alleged murder account is because there were several people who apparently died under similar suspicious circumstances, but their bodies were cremated in accordance to their religious beliefs.
I think that goes on the suspicious list. The moment a family member says no autopsy, please, be like, oh,
yeah, the police can say with all due respect.
Yeah.
Sorry, man. You know,
just say, okay. And then you go do the autopsy. Anyway.
Right. But, you know, it's up to the discretion of them. It's like, you know, if you're standing by a burned down house with a can full of gas and a handful of matches, right? So,
yeah, you don't need to. This is just a natural fire. No need to look into this one.
Yeah, I think it was the wiring. Anyway, so this leaves us with more questions. One of the last updates you can find in the West is that Om filed a defamation case against a guy who is a prominent coordinator for claims of the victims, kind of an organizer for group statements from them or from their families. And that defamation suit, Thailand, again, takes this very seriously, even if you're not the king. But that defamation suit was dismissed by the courts about 4 months ago. So things are moving forward. There's a huge concern in Thailand overall about autopsy procedures and that big question. How did one person, a troubled civilian with no training, get away with these horrendous acts so often for so long? Perhaps most troubling, is it possible someone else could be doing the same?
Well, I mean, nothing really indicated this along the way, but it does make me wonder if there is an inside person with law enforcement, even, you know, like someone helping cover the trail or whatever. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it makes sense for this to be able to have gone on for so long.
Who was that 78 million bot for?
Right.
Who was it for? Why would she need to go and take up more victims to get small amounts of cash like that? Because she didn't get huge amounts from every victim. But like, what is she using that money to fuel, and who's benefiting from it besides her? That's the big question, I think.
Kind of like the question about the various strings leading off from the story about the two Oklahoma guys who got busted for cannabis tracking. And we've received some excellent correspondence about that, folks, quite recently. So thank you for the letters. Keep them coming. Give us new leads on different episode topics you think your fellow conspiracy realist would enjoy. Let us know what you think about this case, because again, we're being fully transparent. We don't have all the answers here. This person has not been convicted in court, but there are deeply, profoundly disturbing things about this case, even aside from the headlines. So tell us where you think these puzzle pieces go. We can't wait to hear from you. We try to be easy to find online.
That's right. And we hope that we succeed. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on Facebook, on YouTube, and also on the social media platform formerly known as Twitter. Some people call it X, some people. You can also find us at Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Hey, you can find our voicemail system by dialing 1-833-STDWYTK. When you call in, you've got 3 minutes. Give yourself a cool nickname and let us know if we can use your message and voice on the air. If you've got links or a huge story to tell us or attachments, whatever it is, especially cat pictures, send them to us. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dealing with pests can be a pain, but relax. Terminix can help.
Because when pests show up, so does Terminix.
With over 95 years of experience, they have what it takes to take on any pest problem fast.
If your home or business has pests, don't stress it.
Terminix it.
Visit Terminix.com to book your appointment online today.
That's TERMINIX.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at CedarPoint.com.